like scary movies?
Uh-huh. I'm getting ready to watch a video.
You're making popcorn?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. Talk to me. Talk to me.
Hi, everybody. I'm George, and welcome to The Best Little Horror House in Philly, the show where we talk about the best horror movie ever made, according to our guest, at least. And today's guest is no stranger to staking a vamp or two when she's not motorcycling around with Luke Perry. Please welcome Barkley the Vampire Slayer, Jen Barkley. How's it going, Jen?
Wow. I never knew that was going to be my title, and I am so thrilled. Like, I've never been given a better, more fitting nickname. The only contradiction is I love vampires, but but if you watch the series, kind of goes hand in hand.
That's right. There's definitely a push-pull attraction revulsion thing happening. It's all kit and caboodle as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your history with horror?
Yeah. So probably got exposed to horror at a much younger age than I should have. I think I was watching Halloween and Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, probably around the age of 5, which is a little bit messed up. I am the youngest of 3. I'm the only girl, and my older brothers were obsessed. So, yeah, exposed to a lot of things very young, wasn't really affected by many. There was like one puppet master, you probably know which one it is, where the puppets are actually the good guys. But whatever the thing is that they're fighting against, I remember that being one of the few things as a child that actually frightened me. And then it wasn't until middle school that The Exorcist literally gave me panic attacks. So I've had a soft spot for it, but also like for a little bit kept it at an arm's length, have come back to horror in probably about the past 10 to 15 years and love it.
Is there something that, like a subgenre that draws you in more easily, you know, as you're sort of getting back into it over the past however many years where you're like, oh, I love vampires, like you said. Is it like, oh, a vampire movie is an immediate sell for me?
I will be more likely to watch it if it is a vampire movie, but I do like suspense thrillers probably the most throughout the entire horror genre.
Hell yeah. So, as we sort of alluded to at the very beginning of the show, the movie we're talking about today is Buffy the Vampire Slayer from 1992. And even though it came out in 1992, the same year as seminal genre gender analysis text Men, Women, and Chainsaws by Carol Clover, very good book that I highly recommend to people, it started in the 80s with Joss Whedon working on his first solo project during Roseanne, a script following the classic B-movie victim. Only this one doesn't just fight back, she wins. And in a behind-the-scenes documentary, production designer Lawrence Miller talked about how exciting it was to have this Valley Girl comedic take on the horror movie genre and, you know, flip things on their head. Yeah, we've had plenty of cool final girls at this point, but to have a badass lady who's proactive, who's the vampire slayer, not just a vampire survivor, that's fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is something we hadn't seen before, and I think that's a part of what has always attracted me to Buffy.
The script was bought by producer Howard Rosenman of Sand Dollar Productions, founded by Dolly Parton, in fact. So thank you, Dolly, for this movie.
That was something that I saw, you know, rewatching and kind of, you know, on the rewatches, Googling things. That was one of the things that I noticed that I thought was really cool. It's like, bless Dolly. We're so lucky to have her.
That's right. She's got her fingers in lots of good pies.
Yeah. It's like her and George Harrison. The things that you find out that he's influenced or produced just will like blow your mind.
So Rosenman was dazzled by the quote unquote Buffy speak in the script. The example specifically that he gave was some plague we're having, huh? But the mixed genres were a big time no-no. It scared the studios and they couldn't really find a director or financing. Luckily, this was solved with a classic two birds, one stone situation where they secured financing through Kazooie Enterprises, an independent film company founded by husband and wife team Kaz and Fran Rubel Kazooie, which actually this company would become one of the foremost connection distributors for the US and Japan, distributing a lot of Japanese movies here and many independent US movies there. Wow. So huge, huge influence, not just behind the camera as the director of Buffy, but powerhouse distributors as well. And Fran herself had directed a popular indie movie called Tokyo Pop in 1988, then had a really rough experience with breaking into the studio scene. She said, I got removed from a movie and I got told that they had decided that it was a guy's story and they better have a man direct the film, okay? And not before I had done any creative work, but while it was in the process of getting financed and everything, I had never started a movie and then not finished it. I have found myself suddenly standing outside many, many times. I could tell you some really ugly, disgusting stories. I have been really mistreated by a lot of people because I was an outsider. I had made one film very much outside the system, and because I was a woman. And she's just sort of looking from the outside in and saying, like, I am ultimately turned off by the studio system and kind of looking for something that's not just your typical Hollywood fare.
Yeah.
That is going to stand out and be sort of a thumb in the eye of these studios that are rejecting her for being a woman. And when they couldn't find an experienced director for the movie, Rosenblum was like, hey, great, like, why don't you just do it? And she said, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I'll do it. And he said, well, how do you know? And she responded, because it's so stupid, I'll do it. And while stupid is kind of a harsh word, I can definitely understand the appeal of, like, a silly, high-concept idea like that, right? Mm-hmm. The whole description is in the name. That's the pitch. What more do you need to know if you're into the idea or not?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's you pick a name like Buffy, right? Like, what do you think of when you hear Buffy, right? I had a dog growing up that was a Cocker Spaniel named Buffy, right? So very, like, pretty, curly ears, that kind of thing, yeah. Right? Like, I don't know why that's where my mind goes, but also Valley Girl, right?
There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, perfect. I mean, you have even more connection and it tied perfectly.
Oh my God. My childhood led me to this.
So he says, take it home and read it. And she does and laughs and laughs and laughs. She's also a big martial arts movie fan and from her time in Japan. And so she is like, oh, this will be fun to incorporate martial arts into this. It was really working for her. Side note, they worked with James Liu on the martial arts.
Cool.
Pretty famous martial artist. He's done some on-screen stuff, but to me is most known for the choreography to Big Trouble in Little China. Mm-hmm. So that's a really cool connection.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The movie was written by Joss Whedon, as I said, famous for such things as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, parentheses, TV.
Who would have Firefly, right?
Firefly, The Avengers, among many other things. And Joss has been open about being a loser at boarding school, calling himself in an interview with Vulture writer Leela Shapiro, very dark and miserable, this hideous little homunculus who managed to annoy everyone.
Wow. Wow. Hey, at least he's like, he's self-actualized, right? Like he knows who he is.
Yeah. He also recognized Buffy as being a wish fulfillment response. Joss is quoted as saying, quote, it took me a long time to realize I was writing about me and that my feeling of powerlessness and constant anxiety was at the heart of everything, which Shapiro succinctly summarizes as he wanted to be her and he wanted to fuck her. And I think that that really is, like, exactly Joss's relationship to Buffy.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe most women in the story.
Yeah.
He does write very strong women, so
yep.
Could track.
He also did say something that I found interesting about why vampires are compelling. Mm-hmm. That a vampire is the, quote, exalted outsider, a creature that feels less than everybody else and also kind of more than everybody else. There's this insecurity and arrogance, and they do a little dance. And I think that that's really visible in Buffy and honestly, teenagers writ large. You know, mm-hmm. There is that attitude that is very sort of aggressive a lot of the times, but that's because it's like a self-defense mechanism.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that is sort of an interesting connection point to vampires as sort of having that same thing.
Yeah. And it's almost like you don't own all of your time and you don't have all the freedom that you think you do, you like to pretend that you do. That's a really interesting way to compare it, a really good analogy.
Yeah. And teens were very much the audience for this movie as well. So they had that as a connection point, and Fran had their interests at heart. Fox kept pushing for a scarier and scarier movie, but she was like, this is about how scary I'd be comfortable showing to a 13 or 14-year-old. She stuck to her guns, and she said, I didn't want the message of everyone is who they are to be eclipsed by the scariness. And I think that that's a really smart move. You know, there's a lot of talk about does PG-13 horror have a place? And I think that movies like this prove that it does, mm-hmm. where this is the exact kind of introduction to horror that I think is really perfect, where, you know, it does show people that there is subtext and interesting layers to a horror movie while also still being accessible to a younger group.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I was definitely at, right? So I was a little older than you are, a bit. I'm going to age myself. I don't care. I was 7 when this came out, right? Mm-hmm. And so in like first, second grade, Beverly Hills 90210 had just come out. You know, my boyfriend Luke Perry. It had all the jokes in the trailer that were made for a kid my age, right? I was mm-hmm. being fed all of this through television all the time. And it landed so well. It really did. And even the jokes that went over my head that rewatching it now, and I'll you know, we can talk about those when we get there. But I don't know. I was really happy to come back to it after all these years and still, you know, love it all in a different way than I did as a kid, but still have that affection for it.
Hell yeah. An evolving affection.
Yeah.
I think that's how you know that a movie has meat to it.
Mm-hmm.
This, as you might imagine, infuriated Joss, who wanted it to become darker and scarier, more like the TV show. You know, basically, that is his vision, and the movie is very much Fran's vision, as per him. He said that he felt he was being locked out of the process, and quote, "I thought they were fucking up, and I thought they should have filmed some of the things that I wrote." This is a bit of an exaggeration. It's not that far from the script. But Fran's changes were sort of softening it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a less elaborate set of rules and mythology for the vampires, a little less on the nose in terms of "you're changing Buffy-style dialogue." It was more trimming than additions, except for one notable addition that we'll discuss when it comes up.
Ooh,
tease.
Ooh, can't wait.
I do think it's for the best, though, because he has talked about how it is her vision. I think that it helps it age better than some of his other work because it isn't just sort of his thumbprint on it exclusively. I think that it definitely has sort of Fran's touch, that she brings a lot to it, and that her perspective is really helping to elevate it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's so different than the series itself, right? So what could this have been if he did have a heavier hand in it and got what he wanted out of it, right? We wouldn't have gotten this, in my opinion, a fantastic series out of him to expand on that universe, right? So I think this is best case scenario.
Hell yeah. Win-win.
Yeah.
As far as the vampires specifically, the crew discussed it not being so much a vampire movie as much as vampirism is the context of the comedy, which let them bend the rules or even make their own as far as the powers, looks, etc. of the vampires. And I do like it. It's sort of a cross between the Lost Boys punker vibe and the gothic drama of the Anne Rice types. They like meet in the middle.
Yeah, they're definitely an interesting type of vampire, that's for sure.
Yeah. We also have David Arquette and Rutger Hauer as Benny and Lothos, two of the main vampires. Although the true king of this movie is Paul Rubens as the sidekick, Amelin. He's just incredible. He's coming off of his scandal. He needs to bounce back. He's a friend of Rosenman, so he has his foot in the door, and this is really does sort of set him on the right path. James Heyman, who's the director of photography, said that he deflated the tension on set right away with a Pee Wee Herman doll from a local toy store that he used to act out his arrest.
Oh, no. again, you know who you are. You know what you've done. You've accepted it, right? We're seeing a trend here.
That's right. And he really is so, so funny in this movie. I think that he just really sort of hits the exact mark in terms of sincerity and camp.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he brings the comedy to another level that I don't think anybody else does, right? I mm-hmm. think without him and really bringing the cheese with it, right? I think it would have taken itself maybe too seriously without that turn it up to 11 for us, Paul. Thank you.
That's right, yeah. And you just let him do his thing off on the side, and you just turn the camera to him and say, what's Amelin doing now?
What's he up to? You know what? I would love to see all of the, like, the cutting room floor, right? Like, I want to see everything.
Gems.
Ugh, nothing but gems.
You also have Donald Sutherland as the mentor Merrick, who Joss Whedon once called just a prick.
Ooh, ooh, okay. Wow, hot take.
Yeah, it was funny. He wasn't too into the idea of being in a movie called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He really bristled at it. But part of the tension, though, and this really made me laugh, is because he was pissed that Paul Reubens had a goatee as well. And he told Rosenman, "I'm the only one who's going to wear the beard around here." Oh my god. And Rosenman was like, "It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, not Potemkin. Chill out."
Yeah, relax, buddy. Relax. You are a strong supporting character.
Yeah.
Chill. Wow.
That's right. Getting Buffy right was a tall order because she is in, I believe, literally every scene. If she's not in a scene, it's very, very few. Mm-hmm. And she's played with aplomb by Christy Swanson. The script deems her, quote, blonde in nature as in name. And Christy describes Buffy as a Mall doll with no concept of anyone but herself, no value system, until she goes through this change.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that Christy really sort of captures that change that Buffy goes through in terms of the tumultuous emotions that come with it.
Yeah.
That there is certainly joy, but there is also a lot of negative things that come with it. And the stratification and being pulled in two different paths of her life, I think, is one of the main sort of themes of this movie, is how to balance those two things.
Yeah.
And for her to capture that is really crucial.
Yeah, definitely. And the shock of what she's hearing, the disbelief of it, the denial. Mm-hmm. Right? It's she's in a tough spot as a high school girl, as a senior, right?
That's right. She goes through the full DABDA process. The script lands on Luke Perry's desk. He's red hot from Beverly Hills 90210.
Don't I know it.
He's eager to demonstrate some range with his brand new 2-movie deal with Fox Pictures. So he wants to play Pike, who he calls the damsel in distress in behind-the-scenes featurettes, which I think is very funny.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah, it is cute.
Good for him.
And there's a funny story that Fran tells about going to get lunch with him, and while she's waiting, she wanders over to the newspaper stand, and there's People magazine with Luke's face plastered across the cover. Voted biggest flirt in his Ohio high school, apparently. And that's the kind of information you won't get on just any podcast.
No, no, but you can tell he worked his way up.
That's right. He was so popular, in fact, that people would find the call sheets, see where he'd be, and 300 screaming girls would show up. So they had to make a fake name for him on the call sheet, and Luke became Chet. So Paul Reubens, as sort of a goof on him, was also listed on the call sheets under a pseudonym. He went with Bo Hunkus.
Way better than Chet. Way yeah, better than Chet.
This A-lister edition does bring 20th Century Fox into the picture as well, so it's no longer a little indie movie. It's now a $9 million studio movie, and now Kazooie only has 4 months to get it in the can. Mm. 5 weeks from the day they said go to prepare the movie and start principal shooting, which was only another 29 days, then the rest was post-production. So really, really tight schedule on this.
That's intense. Yeah.
The set was really high pressure, partially because of that, and partially because of the inexperience of not just Fran, but a lot of the actors were very young as well. They only had one read through, so Fran couldn't really see how they worked together. And so she ultimately kind of went with a laissez-faire vibe, where they decided what the shots would look like on the day, the actors were left to develop the characters how they saw fit, that sort of thing. Fran said, quote, "I know that I didn't have money and I didn't have time, so I decided to make a movie using as much energy as possible and just shake the jar. That would be the movie, and it can sometimes be quite a volatile cocktail."
Wow. That's one way to make content.
Hell yeah. Go off, queen.
Get it.
The problem is, while freewheeling improv can be nice for actors, it's hell for the crew. They're already working 29 nights in the rainy season of January and February. A lot of it is outdoors. There's also, frankly, a lot of sexism in the boys' club. At one point, things got so tense that Fran had to walk off set.
Oh, no.
And Luke Perry came to get her, and she asked if this attitude would be happening if she was a man, and Luke said no. And so she said she'd only come back if everyone understood that this wasn't acceptable anymore.
Good for her.
And she specifically shouted out Luke as being incredibly supportive throughout the whole process, not just in helping it get made from a financial perspective, but also helping shift the energy, really sort of lift her up as a director. Big shouts out to both Fran and Luke, in my opinion.
Hell yeah. I agree, right? He may have called himself the damsel in distress, but true hero behind the scenes.
That's right. There was a lot of buzz around the movie, thanks to the evocative poster and the fun trailer, but it only grossed $14.1 million, thanks in part to the release date. It was released during the Summer Olympics instead of being a fun autumnal release.
Oh, so, no. Yeah. You want timing. That in spooky season. Come on.
That's right.
They so really fucked that up.
Certainly so. And this is a really big disappointment for Kazooie in particular. But when the movie was released on video and the TV show became a smash hit, the movie did see some renewed interest, a bit of a cult following developed. Both Christy and Fran said they were glad the show exists as a continuation of the character and role model. But obviously, I think it's cool for it to lead people back to the original, too. Sort of be a trail back. It's a cool sort of shoulders for that show to stand on.
Yeah, definitely. And I just watched through the entire series probably about a year and a half ago. And that's what kind of reinvigorated my interest in rewatching the movie, right? Mm. It was like, I enjoyed the journey so much of the show. Why not relive the funnier version?
Hell yeah. So let's get into the actual movie.
Yeah.
We open up with some very serious narration informing us that from the dawn of man, vampires have stalked us as prey. But the Watcher trains a slayer to fight against them each time the previous slayer dies. Ooh, very dramatic, very intense. And then it immediately captures the energy of the overall juxtaposition as we hard cut from the so dramatic as to become camp opening of Europe in the Dark Ages to SoCal in the Light Ages, which I think is a funny joke right away.
Yeah, but they didn't hit on it too. Like, it was so quick that you may not notice it if you blink. It's so good.
And cheerleader Buffy Summers dances during a basketball game for the Hawks.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm sure the name choice was intentional, but it's definitely an interesting mascot choice.
It's so funny to me. Even when you think about the name, like the team, the Hogs, you're like, I bet I know what the mascot's going to look like. And it's so much funnier than whatever it is that you're picturing.
They did a good job with theirs as well. Yeah,
they did. It's like phase one of Jigsaw's costume in Saw.
Oh my God, it is. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
You also have Mark DiCarlo as the basketball coach. His whole deal is basically improvised. He said, hey, the Lakers are popular. It would be funny to have a coach who wanted to look like Pat Riley but doesn't know anything about basketball. It's just like Masonic symbols. And guess what? I agree. It's funny.
It's great. And he just uses positive reinforcement to motivate the team. Like, be confident. Go out there. You're going to do great.
That's right.
Big fan.
You deserve the ball.
Yeah. Duh.
Afterwards, we join Buffy and her friends at the mall, where she complains about Mr. Howard, a teacher who says she has no concept of history.
Come on.
Oh, yeah? Explain why she's gravitating towards a jacket that's so 5 minutes ago, Mr. Howard.
I forget I can't remember it now, but when she's complaining about him, there is somewhere that she references and she's like, I would what was it? Was it Belize?
Because she says she's never going to go to Spain.
To Spain, yeah. It's somewhere in South America, yeah.
Right.
I can't remember what it is, but I was like, oh, it's a great joke and I get why. It is
funny. Obviously, this 5 minutes ago thing is also a joke that Kimberly, played by Hilary Swank, by the way, is lying about the jacket being out of style because she wants it.
Yeah, duh. But
it also establishes the idea of Buffy being tied to the past as the generational heritage falls to her. Mm-hmm. That even in her own way, even if it is only at face value, that she is attracted to this thing from 5 minutes ago, much as her heritage is 5 centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
The gals decide to go see a movie, and we've had this exact conversation while trying to decide on a theater. Omniplex, Nisich, no way, no THX, they don't even have Dolby. The Beverly Center shows previews for foreign films, yuck. And the AMC has bogus corn with ushers on the Acne Patrol. So the only choice is the Pavilion.
Yeah, God, we all know the theaters in our area and where all of those things happen.
That's right. It is also just sort of an interesting gesture to high school's social capital and being seen in the right theater. They don't know what's playing there. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's just the right place for them to be.
Yeah, yeah. And that feels very true. True to adolescence in the in the 90s, that's for sure. Yeah.
They're stopped getting onto the elevator by Donald Sutherland hitting the call button last second. Excuse much? Rude or anything? And hey, this guy looks just like the man we saw in the opening. Mm. But it can't be, right?
It can't be. It can't be. I actually, something that stood out to me with that is the friend Nikki, literally just as the elevator's closing goes, what a homeless.
Yeah.
They are so, throughout this whole movie, there were so many lines that just, they were either very of the time or that they were, you know, like, that's so fetch for Mean Girls, yeah. Right? Like, they're really reaching for something there. And just the way that they phrase things, like, what a homeless. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. What an insult.
It strikes you.
Yeah. It's startling.
Yeah. I also did literally think he was going to get on the elevator with them at first. And I was aghast at the idea of him just awkwardly going to the ground floor together. But Buffy does have a moment with him as her friends giggle at his outfit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her old soul, she recognizes it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie theater, we get our first encounter with Pike and his pal Benny. And they snuck into the movie, but they're still pissed that these girls are talking about their weekend plans at full volume. And honestly, they are right.
It's justified. I mean, they do get a bit more obnoxious than the girls in the end, mm-hmm. but like...
Yeah, they get loud too, and that's the wrong reaction. You don't want to escalate. Yeah.
I mean, that's adolescence as well, right? I get it. Teenage hormones. Been there. Not
so
fun.
So true.
Not fun, but the girls started it, and they were in the wrong.
They absolutely did.
Yeah.
Buffy's plans that she's discussing include her boyfriend Jeff staying the night. Her parents are frequently out of town, so this isn't an issue. And in fact, he's pulling up outside the theater right now.
Ah, Jeff. I feel like every 90s movie had a Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
Or Chet, if you will.
You gotta have a Chet.
But a Beau Hunkus, you don't get many of those.
So true. Jen, that's so true. That's
so true.
As Buffy leans across the car to smooch Jeff, Jeff's goon, Andy, is very gross and asks to borrow her. And Buffy sort of lightly protests, and Jeff laughs it off. And he says, no, he's an animal. He'd get you dirty. And it's very effective at setting an unfortunate baseline for the acceptable behavior in the system that Buffy currently operates in.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I think... very true to the times.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So something that actor, the friend, when he first came up, I was like, that guy, I know that guy. He's in another movie from, I had to look it up, 1993. It's called My Boyfriend's Back. Another one that I watched a lot on, you know, like cable TV, a PG-13 right. High school horror where boyfriend dies, gets buried, comes back to life.
Classic zombie,
right? And he's fantastic in that. So it was interesting having this like re-exposure to that actor in a role where he's a little scummy there.
Yeah, he's a slime for sure in this movie.
A little bit. I mean, he does ask for consent, but he's a little creepy doing so. Yeah. But the consent is from the boyfriend, not from the girl. So
that is very
all
true.
Negatives. All negatives.
Yep. We went looking for a positive.
I tried,
couldn't find
one. I'm an optimist. I can't help it. I want to see the good in people.
Unfortunately for Andy, none to be found.
No.
Their other pal hopped out of the car. He walks through the park, but he stops when he senses somebody behind him.
Uh-oh.
What are you, some kind of weirdo or something? Mm. He demands as Paul Rubens slides into frame, sassily snarling, perched atop the horse of a carousel.
It's beautiful.
What an entrance. Dude. Yeah.
Great entrance, great pose, A+. Mm-hmm.
That's right. The news report immediately after details his death by a severe neck wound that resembled, in the words of one bystander, a really gross hickey.
I love that so much.
Such a funny rug pull. Obviously, you think it's going to be resembles a vampire bite, and no, not the case.
Because you know what? I like that in this universe, up until this moment, vampires aren't real. There's no way that could have been a vampire. Somebody just got way too into it and a little out of hand.
I guess so. I guess it's a lot out of hand.
Logical teen explanation. Yeah. Hormones are crazy.
That's right. Buffy dreams once again of being the Slayer in the Dark Ages, leaping from a window to plunge a stake through a vampire's wretched, unbeating heart. The only problem is, Lothos, the lead vampire, leads a bunch more vampires, and they finish this ancient Slayer off.
Classic.
Classic tale as old as time, literally.
Yeah.
One of these vampires was indeed Paul Rubens as Amelin, so we join him telling a coffin that the new family has begun assembly, and we intuit this must be Lothos, also brought to modernity.
Yeah, and that is, so that's the scene with his current tomb, right? Which has, like, this amazing white-framed open casket with red light pouring out of it. I loved that set. It was so cool to me. And that's also, I think, where they, is that before they take one of their friends? I think it is.
That is before.
Yeah, it's like right before, but it's still the same set. Yeah, it's just.
Yeah. Oh, it's sick.
Very really beautiful. Is. Like neon 80s vibes happening in there, which.
Guy's got a sense of for the dramatic.
Yeah.
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 The next day, Buffy and her pals are working on the senior dance theme. It has to be socially conscious, so they toss around homelesses.
Oh, again. Again.
Maybe a sickness that isn't too depressing.
Bugs.
Yeah, Buffy suggests the environment, and of course, top three threats to the environment right now, litter, forest fires, and bugs.
Yep,
check, bugs. Check, check. Makes sense worst. To me.
Hate bugs.
Also got to get rid of that ozone layer.
Oh, we have to. We got to get rid of it.
The goal of this socially conscious theme is, of course, applicable to the change Buffy is going through, and as such further extrapolated to teens at large. To reflect their growing awareness of and involvement in the world around them. That was the goal given to them. I think it is sort of the thesis of the movie as well.
Yeah, yeah. Pay attention.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Hey, when you're aiming at 13 and 14-year-olds, you do have to kind of like really spell some stuff out.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
At a cafe that night, Buffy's friend Kimberly walks in, wearing that jacket that she claimed was over.
Goddamn Kimberly.
Kimberly!
The true villain.
What a rascal this Kimberly is. Buffy is pissed as hell, rightfully so. I also like that Jenny, who's been echoing Kimberly the whole time, has a new, but different, leather jacket as well.
And something that I liked about this is that it was called Café Blasé. Wow.
That is nice. That is nice.
Wow. That's
nice.
I just appreciated that. I thought it was fun.
Definitely. And the intricacies of high school relationships on full display here.
Mm-hmm.
Pike and Benny walk in, thrashed, as Buffy accuses. They dump a bunch of change in front of the waitress, asking what they can get. And she says, two coffees or a hot dog. Nothing on it, nothing inside. This is an amazing joke. It doesn't pay off right this second, but I'm going to just say it now. Where she comes back and instead of having their own cup of coffee, they've elected to share the hot dog.
Yep.
And not just share it, but each take a whole individual component of the hot dog.
Yep. It's like, that's one way to split a hot dog. I just want the bread. You just want the dog.
That's right. I guess that makes the bun the hot.
Yeah. I've never thought about it that way. Interesting.
Much to consider. Yeah, much to consider.
Wow. Blowing my mind right now.
I also love that they tell Pike, that's not a name, that's a fish, when I had a very similar reaction.
Did you?
Maybe I'm a Valley girl at heart. What can I say?
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, we won't hold it against you.
As if. It is also, I think, interesting that Benny has very sharp teeth already.
Yeah. I mean, it's like he was made for it.
Yeah, he's ready to become a vampire.
He is.
But Buffy is ready to become the Slayer, with both elements of the metaphor regarding feminism unifying as he waggles the hot dog at her, pretending it's a penis, and she grabs a knife to split it down the middle.
I mean, that's the only way to handle that joke, in my opinion.
That's right. That's right. What else are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Pike and Benny discuss them later that evening. They make plans to run away together. Away from this town full of, quote, rich bitches that are all the same and barely even human. Ironic, considering he's about to join the ranks of the undead, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he needs his clan, too.
Yeah. One thing that occurs to me is that it seemed possible that Benny is compensating for something, considering even just immediately his desire to run away with Pike and comments about getting drunk enough to have sex with him.
Mm.
There's a lot of homoeroticism to their relationship.
There is, yeah, definitely. But he does use a term that I haven't thought about in a really long time when talking about Buffy, which is yabos.
They defy gravity.
What? Yes, yeah, exactly. Like, that's a part of what I took in from this is like all of the lingo that just I haven't thought about in a very long time. Like, when did yabos go out of style? But like,
great question.
When did it come into bring style?
It back. This, this show is bringing back yabos.
I'm thrilled to be a part of that. I will see. I will have to find out ways that I can weave it into my daily conversations.
You know, as so say we all. Am I right?
Yeah. Come on, bring it back.
This scene is done very well, though, in my opinion. They establish the high cliff they're on, the sheer rock face that would be impossible to climb, and then they have Amelin show up floating behind Benny to bite his neck while Merrick watches mysteriously, then saves Pike. Just fun. It's good. It's good horror stuff. Good vampire stuff.
Yeah, but Merrick also says nothing to Pike about the fact that Benny was just taken away. Right? Like, bro, you just witnessed that. Why aren't you warning him?
What do you say? He can't get involved.
Ugh. I know. He's in a tough spot.
Merrick.
Come on. Why do Watchers have such strict rules?
Dude, him and Uatu need to have a fucking conference and figure this shit out.
For real.
Merrick approaches Buffy after school the next day, and she's very much not impressed at first, though he is impressed by her acrobatics skills.
I was impressed. They did a good job if they had someone else, I think they did a good job in, you know, the early 90s, not making that very apparent.
Definitely. She also says, why were you looking for me? Am I in trouble or something? Because if I am, I didn't do it. Very charming response / delivery from Buffy / Christy.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a really good way of sort of establishing their relationship. I like it a lot.
Yeah, definitely. The, like, the what did I do wrong? Because I didn't do it.
Right.
Not for me. Thank you very much. I'm a good normal girl.
That's right. And Merrick says no, he's in trouble because he's years late to train her, so just come with him to the graveyard for your birthright.
Nothing weird about that.
No. I don't think so, she says. She's heard about his type. Skanky old men that attack little girls, right?
Red flag.
That's right. The ultimate red flag, many would say. But he tells her she's been chosen to be the vampire slayer, Buffy. And she says, why don't you just take the first runner-up, okay? Great. There's some funny jokes in this, I gotta
say.
There's
a lot of really good ones. Yeah.
He tries to show her the birthmark that's the sign. The mark of the coven! But she had that big old mole removed.
That big hell hairy thing?
Yeah. She's about to remove herself as well.
Yeah.
I do think that is an interesting sort of action to consider in terms of we see her reject her heritage. We see her reject her heritage in the form of the mole as well.
Yep.
You know, it's all working here. Subtext.
It's like this is a part of who she is and who she'll be forever. And in her rich California girl mind, it's a blemish, right? It's an imperfection and something that's got to go.
That's right. He catches her attention, though, with the talk of her dreams. She had never told anybody about them. And of course, it works for him to know this, but it's also interesting, like, I never told my friends I dreamed about being something that wasn't just like perfect blonde cheerleader arm candy for the popular jock. Because of that social currency that we've talked about, the idea of wanting something different than what is in this hierarchy, sort of the ultimate, the peak of it, would be anathema
to
these people.
Social suicide.
Right.
Yeah.
Can't be doing that, Buffy.
No, that and them athletes. You can't be telling your high school friends your weird dreams about being a slave, and you can't join the athletes. Like,
that's right.
That's in the rule book when you enter high school as a girl. It's like those two things.
The boys one is like, do not shower in the locker room. Just go through the rest of your day stinking.
That tracks, yeah. That's the only rule in the boys' one.
That's the only rule. The rest just says, go fucking nuts, dude. Yeah.
Wild out, friend. Wild out. Yeah.
So it's off to the graveyard with a strange man to hunt for vampires on a school night.
Fuck it.
Fuck it. You only live once, yeah. Unless you're a vampire.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you become a vampire.
That's right.
Yeah.
Bobby Berman died 3 days ago, and they wait for his emergence from the grave. Really funny reaction from both parties as Buffy asks Merrick for some gum. Mm-hmm. They just really, like, physical comedy there, both nail it. Really good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, camera-wise, really funny zoom in on Merrick's face as the hands emerge from the ground. Very, like, corny in a purposeful, over-the-top way.
Yeah.
It was good. Honestly, the whole scene is just working for me. You know, he had given Buffy a stake and a cross, not that you'll need it to do anything, just for your protection. Not.
Yeah, no.
Then he's immediately rocked by this vampire.
It's like, what were you going to do if she didn't actually take action there? You're just going to let it all happen, Merrick? Like, What if she's just a big old baby and she runs away and she doesn't believe that she's the one?
Wow.
Could have had a very short movie.
Yeah, that's true. What? Luckily, Buffy is no pushover. Mm-hmm.
No,
it is legitimately startling, though, when the other vampire emerges to grab her as she's watching this.
That's too many vampires.
That's so true, Jen.
Yeah, like one, like he says it later, one vampire, but like.
That's right.
Two vampires? Your first time, Buffy?
I don't think so.
Girl.
She does wind up killing both of them, though. She's a damn natural, baby.
It's amazing. Who would have thunk it?
It's her birthright, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And Merrick is impressed.
She sees it.
That's right. He warns her, though, not to let anybody know that she knows what's going on. Because if the vampires find out who she is, it won't be her hunting them anymore.
Right?
Ooh, spooky.
That's some foreshadowing right there.
That's right. And Pike is sleeping. He gets a knock at his window. What the hell? It's Benny.
I love this scene. I mean, he is passed out, dead drunk asleep, with loud music on, and Benny shows up at the window.
Hell yeah. He demands Pike invite him in, but something's not right. You on something? Asks Pike.
Which is such a good joke. It's such a good joke. Oh my god.
Yeah. Benny says no, and he fucking loses his mind because he's, of course, floating there.
Yeah. Yeah,
so he is.
It is not a ground floor window. That is a second story window. Are you on something, man? No, he's literally floating.
Yep. It's great. And he screams, "Let me in, Pike. I'm hungry." It is spooky, but it also is a very funny reaction by Pike.
Yeah.
Just like, go away. Yeah. Go away.
Mm, I don't want this.
Yeah, it's just a great encapsulation of the dynamic that this movie does balance so well, of that horror in one hand and comedy in another, in this same exact scene, from line to line.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing both. It's really incredible.
Yeah.
Great shifting.
Yeah. And I think David Arquette does a fantastic job. He's
so good.
He plays crazy so well, like just like fueled up on that power. This is the first time you see it, and it's so well.
Mm-hmm. That's right. There's an amazing moment when Buffy arrives home. She's all mussed up. She has blood on her face, and suddenly her mom is there.
Do you know what time it is?
Yeah. Buffy says, around 10? And it turns out the mom has just pissed her watch is slow, and she's on her way back out with Dad.
Great parenting.
That's right. Buffy dreams of Lothos again, although it's less fighting and more seduction in this dream. Meanwhile, her pal Cassandra has been kidnapped by Amelin and brought to Lothos for dinner.
I spoiled that one. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, and he says, "He knows you're awake. Your heartbeat sounds out to him like thunder." And Lothos descends with regality and a sinister laugh.
Oh my god.
The truth of this, though, is that Rutger and Paul, whenever they're floating in and out of frame, they're on a forklift.
Oh,
which is a pretty funny movie magic shattering image.
I love that so much. I love realistic effects, practical effects. Yeah. It's just so much fun to hear about the ways that they make these things before we just put everybody on green screen.
There you go. It works. It works just perfect here, as far as I'm concerned.
Very effective.
Yeah. Merrick is creeping around the locker room since Buffy didn't meet him as they planned.
What the fuck, Merrick? So weird.
It is weird. I love her line. What are you doing here? This is a naked place.
This is a naked place.
It's really funny, especially because she's fully clothed.
Yeah, and so were all the girls as she walked into the locker room. Oh, it's fantastic. And this whole scene, I think this has some of the funniest parts to me. Amazing.
It is great. She's worried about not being up to the task. So Merrick literally twirls his mustache.
He's like, well, both fingers.
Then throws a knife at her, which she catches. And he's like, see,
I told you so.
It's insane. It's hilarious.
He threw a knife at my head.
Yeah. The problem is, she tells him at knife point, she doesn't want to be the chosen one. She doesn't want to spend her life chasing down vampires. Mm-hmm. All I want to do is graduate high school, go to Europe, marry Christian Slater, and die.
Duh.
Duh.
Hello. Same.
This is a line that really demonstrates the gulf between Joss and having a woman director. Because in the script, it was Charlie Sheen, star of grim war film Platoon, as opposed to dark comedy cutie, Heather's own Christian Slater.
Yeah. I mean, I think they were both... Because, I mean, I think Charlie Sheen was hot from Major League. I think he was on a run there because he was the hot bad boy in that, right?
Yeah, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like the war movie...
Team Christian Slater here.
Yeah. I feel like the war movie... put him into another sort of darkness level.
Yeah, that's true.
Where it's more to this movie's audience appealing, I feel for a dark comedy like Heather's.
Definitely. But
she also slugs him when he reveals that he put her by that fresh grave on purpose to get attacked. Fucked up, Merrick.
Come on, I mean...
You earned that one.
He's a weird dude. Mm-hmm. He is a weird dude.
That's right. And I think it's interesting that he is very much sort of manipulating her and using her, sort of a symptom of the system that Buffy is in that ties into when he is like, hey, you're right. You don't do things our way. You know, go do your own thing, that he recognizes a little bit of his own complicity.
Yeah.
So I think that is definitely true, that he is sort of a weirdo and sort of does a lot of things wrong in his treatment of Buffy in this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
And her punch was perfect enough to convince her, actually. She didn't even break a nail. And she goes, oh, I must be the chosen one.
Come on. Obvious.
That's right. And now it's time for a classic training sequence.
The best.
One of my favorite things of all time. Lots of punching, running through tires, climbing a rope, all the hits.
Mm-hmm. Punching bag, flips.
Oh, yeah.
They really nail it.
That's right. Her time away from school, though, has caught the attention of Gary Murray, administrator. Although he prefers to be thought of as Gary Murray, party guy.
Party guy. Played by Steven Root, who I absolutely love.
He is a delight. And he says, so tell me, it's drugs, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's always drugs. It's always drugs. And he tells Buffy he can relate. He did a bunch of acid in the 60s. And as he tells her this story, we see how sharpened her skills are now, because she spits a thumbtack and stakes an annoying fly to the wall with it.
Just very impressive. She spits it too, right?
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's right.
Wow. Could never. I wish I had that skill. We live in the city, right? You open your front door and sometimes a fly gets it. I'm sure this happens outside of the city too, where people live in nature.
No.
It's just the city is the only place that has flies. But when a fly gets in your house, man, if I had that skill to just track them and spit a thumbtack at them.
That's right. There'd be a whole lot less flies in the city. I can tell you that.
At least in my house.
That's right.
My cats do a decent job though. I should give them credit. Shout out to cats.
Shout out. Pest control. Everyone just thinks that it's just mice, but they'll go after those bugs too.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank God, because I don't like them. And just like Buffy, I don't like bugs. That's got
to
get rid of them.
Number one threat to the environment.
Bugs.
Bugs.
I hate them.
Pike is finishing up the van to leave town and warns his boss if he sees Benny to run.
That interaction also. Just very interesting to me.
I do like Luke Perry's delivery in that, though. I feel like it is kind of ominous when he's like, when you see him, run.
Yeah. What do you do if you see Benny? Run.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, Pike.
Luke. Tell him. All right.
Things are going to heat up for you. I feel it.
That night, Buffy goes for a hunt. She's being very conspicuously vulnerable to draw a vampire out, whose ass Buffy promptly kicks.
Wasn't the song she was singing something like, feelings? Feeling? Yeah, like she definitely so was singing like singing the damsel in distress song.
That's
right. It's so like on the nose of trying to just portray that you're weak and vulnerable.
That's right.
It's a funny way to present the opening of that scene as she walks down this alleyway.
Yeah, it's good. It's very goofy. I like it a lot. Merrick isn't impressed, though, saying the environment that she was in could have led to her downfall if there'd been any more of them. And we can never forget the cardinal rule, Jen. One vampire is a lot easier to kill than 10.
Right? That's what I was saying. How'd she do two at once her first time? Buffy's just, she's the supreme.
You got it or you don't, right?
She's the supreme slayer, man.
That's right. That's right. And because of that, she gets pissed at his note. Since she's the one with her neck on the block here. She's not wrong.
Mm-mm.
And he defensively tells her that his job is to train, not to interfere, even if he thinks they're exceptional. But they quickly soften as she realizes that he's been stuck living the same life over and over again, and how painful that might be.
Mm-hmm.
So she comforts him a bit, saying that she has something the other girls didn't have. Her keen fashion sense.
Mm. It's gonna make all the difference.
That's right. Vampires of the world, beware. Merrick's first joke, and she loves it. He's human.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was really cute where she asked him, like, how are you feeling? Are you okay? Do you need to lie down? I know it hurts the first time. It's painful the first time. I just thought that was a really, really cute interaction between the two of them.
Yeah, it is funny. She does a good job. And I think that it's clear that she is looking for some kind of connection point with her. And he's, because he has seen all of these slayers die every time, he holds them at arm's length, as we see in his interactions with Buffy. And so when you see the cracks in this boundary form, it's very satisfying for her and for us.
Yeah, definitely. To see the human side of him rather than it just being so task-oriented that he just needs to get her to realize who she is and start embracing her greatness.
Right. Meanwhile, Pike's van died. He didn't do a very good job fixing it, buddy.
Damn it, Pike.
And suddenly a whole bunch of vampires are approaching. It does roar to life, and Pike drives away with Amelin still clinging to the front.
Mm.
And he crashes the van, though not before knocking Paul off with a branch that cuts his arm off because it was plunged through the roof.
Yeah.
You ruined my new jacket. Kill him a lot.
One of the best lines. Just as he stands there, looks down at the missing arm, really focuses on the jacket. It's not about the arm in that moment. It's about the ruining of the jacket.
That's right.
So now you must be killed a lot.
That's absolutely right. Pike fights the vampires, but suddenly Buffy is there and saving his ass. She even uses the neck of Pike's guitar to stake the vampire that's attacking him.
A vampire slaying MacGyver, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Adaptability is what separates her from just your average old slayer.
She thinks outside the box. She's an innovator.
Outside the coffin.
Even. Oh, there it is. We got it.
She and Merrick take Pike home to Buffy's home to recover from his accident, where she reveals the truth to him about vampires and gets a little vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
She says, 3 weeks ago, I thought, well, I didn't think at all, but I definitely didn't expect this. You know what it's like when everything is suddenly different and everything you thought was crucial seems so stupid? You find yourself babbling incoherently to a strange man in your living room? Shaking my damn head over here.
Dude, sounds like the first time that I did mushrooms. No, just
there
kidding.
You go.
The veil's pulled back. I'm rambling away at somebody. It's me in a mirror. Who would have? I don't know.
You just go, hey, man, I'm a slayer suddenly.
It's like being pulled out of the Matrix.
That's right. Oh, which I just watched.
I know.
That's what, right. Holy
part of
shit,
why I said
dog.
It.
Oh, my God. This could just become a Matrix podcast.
I'm not so ready quickly. For that. I did not go see it with you last night. I'm not prepared.
Guys, you got to see The Matrix. I'm back in 1999. I'm fully, like, just dying to talk to people about The Matrix.
Oh, man. You were hype on it a couple days ago, too. So now
that's
I'm sure
true.
It's in full effect right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah. I was, like, getting excited about going to see it. And then I went to go see it in Dolby Theaters, no less, people out there.
Amazing.
And, yeah, it really was amazing. It totally took it to another level. Fucking incredible movie. Every time that, like, any of the characters are on screen, I was like, holy shit, they are fucking killing it in this performance.
You know what? Maybe I'll try to prioritize this weekend, get at least the first one in, and then, you know, Paul and I can be a part of the current Matrix conversations now.
That's right. Hey, I'm definitely down for that. They call me the Matrix Evangelist, and I'm out here spreading the good word. So
preach.
That's right. All right, back to Buffy. Pivot. Here we go. Come on, George.
Focus. No more Matrix. Focus.
That's right.
It's my fault. I knew what I was doing when I said it.
You knew it. You threw me off, Jen, but in a good way that I appreciated because I do want to talk about the Matrix. Pike says he does know what it's like.
Yeah.
He lost Benny.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that that's really equates the same as what Buffy's going through, but.
That's true. But sure. Also, something seems to have happened that he's like a scumbum.
Yeah. like they all call him the homeless kid, right? Yeah. But, right. Like, he's not homeless. He's got an apartment, man. The second story with big windows.
That's right. Lots of natural light in that.
Yeah, and he can play his music as loud as he wants. That sounds great.
Yeah, he's living his best life.
Yeah, he's lying to Buffy. He didn't go through shit.
Cassandra's body has been found. Oh, no. Although her friends seem more upset that Kimberly's never going to get her yellow leather jacket back now. Because it's all icky.
Yeah, well, whoops.
Whoops is right. And Jeff isn't sure he's going to be able to even go to the memorial service because Coach says he needs to work on his abs.
All right, Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff. Go off.
That's right. Go off indeed. And the callousness of the student body concerning the amount of deaths, I do find very interesting. It both adds to the sort of dreamy surreality that this juxtaposition creates, and also creates a gulf between them and Buffy's new maturity. So, double duty in a way that's really working.
Yeah. Just no one taking it serious enough, and then Buffy taking it as seriously as she possibly can.
That's right, because she knows the truth.
Yeah.
She got vampired.
She's the only one. She's got nobody else is going to do shit. Sorry, Buffy.
There was a Calderon Dracula out there.
God damn it, again.
As Buffy passes in the hall, Jeff's goon Andy grabs her butt.
Andy's
back.
Stop.
Slime on a new level. Mm. And she kicks his ass with swiftness.
He deserves it.
He deserves it, no doubt. And this is one of the more crucial moments for Buffy. Because we've seen that her new responsibility doesn't, despite her fears, displace her sense of self. She's still her keen fashion sense and humor intact. But her empowerment also lets her now perceive value outside the patriarchal social capital that the high school condenses and codifies. Mm-hmm. Earlier, Buffy allowed Jeff to laugh off Andy's behavior because she doesn't want to cause a scene that might threaten things. As we said, she is at the top of the pecking order, and she doesn't want to do any kind of social suicide. But now that she has self-worth instead of external validation, she is comfortable saying that this, hey, Jeff, or hey, Andy, this makes me uncomfortable by slamming him into the locker and yelling at Jeffrey when he not only fails to defend her, then labels her simply his thing, but actually chastises her before saying anything to Andy at all.
Yep. It's, it's pretty unfortunate. Fucking Jeff.
It is. It certainly is. And this anchoring of self means that she doesn't need to get burned up by this new worldview. Her liberation allows her to function in the current order on her own terms, beating up Andy, rather than being consumed by it and turned mindless like the vampire teens. She has sort of self-actualized in a way that lets the awfulness of high school roll off her back.
Yeah. She's seen that the world is much bigger than what high school has to offer and what it's exposed her to, and
exactly
the relationships that she has there and how she's treated.
That's right. And she leans into it.
Yeah.
And she tells Merrick that she's going to be cheering at the basketball game despite his protest, because that is still part of who she is.
Yep.
And he goes as well to keep an eye on things,
but also to like keep up the creepy old guy vibe.
Definitely.
Like, you don't have any children here. What are you doing?
I do like that the lady next to him sort of gives him a little side eye.
Yeah. You're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Never seen you before around.
What a homeless. But like he's nicely dressed. Like that's a weird thing to say. I'm still very upset about that one.
It is good though, because the original third pal from Jeff's car, Grueler, is now full vampire and ready to play. And we need a fucking crossover with Teen Wolf pronto.
We do. We definitely do. But I'm positive Teen Wolf would win. I don't think that Grueler scored any points.
Well, he did do one like floating dunk, but he gets a little sort of distracted.
Yeah. Yeah. He's too aggressive.
Definitely. We also get the lovely cheer of how funky is your chicken, how loose is your goose. Mm. So come on, all you hog fans, and shake your caboose.
Shake your caboose. It's a classic. Where it's a classic, baby. When we watched it, Paul was like, is that like a cheer? Like, is that thing? And I was like, oh yeah, when I was, you know, five and a cheerleader, because that was a thing. I knew that one. Sure.
Hell yeah. Even at like color war at camp. That sort of thing. Yeah,
all right.
That one specifically.
Persists, so. I hope. Yeah, that's right. I hope that the next generations are also shaking their cabooses and doing the funky chicken.
So true. Loose goose. Mm. Don't forget. Do not have a tense goose, folks.
Don't forget the loose goose.
That's right. Grueler is showing off. He's dunking via float. He's abandoning the concept of zones. He's threatening Ben Affleck. It works.
It works. He just gives up. It was very Ben Affleck of him.
It was. Fran said, quote, "It was Ben's first film, and he kept coming up to me and asking what his motivation is."
Oh my god. That's so much cuter knowing it's his first film.
She said, "It was a really hard day, because I don't know how to play basketball." And I went, "I'm gonna remember this guy, and if he ever shows up at a casting call, I'm gonna really have to avoid him, because he's got a lot of questions as an actor."
Oh. See, this is making me like Ben Affleck a little more.
There you go.
Aw. Not what America's I expected to happen.
Number one sad sack.
Yeah, yeah. Aw, he's just a curious little boy. He's confused.
Yeah.
Help him. Hollywood, help him.
Oh, man. Speaking of Ben Affleck, not pretty recently, when it came out, and I saw it in theaters, that movie where he's like an alcoholic basketball coach came out, and I was like, oh, fuck, Ben Affleck, inject this straight into my veins, dude.
Oh, man.
So right up my alley.
It was good.
I love a like comeback sports movie about that kind of thing, and he really is a perfect sad sack.
Yeah,
nailed that kind of role.
Nailed it. All right, so if I want to,
I think it's called The Way Back.
That sounds right. Yeah, it sounds familiar. All right, I'll add it to the list for if I ever want to emotionally annihilate myself, but also get really invested in some basketball.
That's right.
That day will come.
It is March Madness, so.
Tis the season. Maybe that's like my early Saturday morning watch.
Just ruin the rest of your Saturday.
That's fine. I've got plans with my husband's family without him in the afternoon.
Understand.
They'll
understand.
I'll tell them I watched The Way Back, and they'll be like, "Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, I get it."
Of course, the scene where Ben Affleck is like crying and drinking a beer in the shower. We all remember.
And then it's just me crying and drinking a beer at Topgolf. It's going to be great.
It will be great.
Looking forward to it.
Buffy attacks and chases Grueler off the court. She grabs a motorcycle from Eric DeRay to pursue the vampire to the Rose Bowl float storage. And I'm fully ready to believe that this is, in fact, Leo Johnson's twin brother from Twin Peaks, especially with Joanna Rae doing the casting for both.
Yeah, yeah. And the few things that he says are not very pleasant. he is definitely Leo's brother in some kind of way. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah,
I was like, oh, typecast. Oof.
he's got the vibe down.
Oh, yeah. You're looking real scuzzy all the time. But you know what? Get paid, buddy. Get paid.
Grueler gets the drop on her with some pals, and she pleads for him to remember, "You were my friend." And he says, "Now, I'm a god." Ugh. And he clicks his new teeth at her.
Man.
It's a really effective moment in my opinion. It's like genuinely eerie.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's probably what it feels like.
Sure. Especially delightful because it's followed up by a moment for Pike, who stabs him and says, "Now you're a coat rack."
Which is hilarious, but also
roasted as hell.
Also, the coincidence of when Buffy gets that motorcycle, she just so happens to ride past him as he's at a motorcycle.
Wow.
So he then it's serendipitous, really. Like, so I think that's a lot of the story is just there, the star-crossed lovers from the beginning, right?
That's so true, so true. They exchange saving each other's butts, and he says that he came back because these damn guys are everywhere and he wants revenge.
He wants, yeah, was it revenge?
To cause some damage. He says to cause some
damage. Yeah, to cause some damage. Yeah, and so leading up to that little interaction that they have, there were two other vampires with them, and one, you know, killed the traditional way by Buffy. The other one is attacking Pike, and Buffy basically, like, leapfrogs, like, over the vampire and lands on Pike, but then you never really see her kill the vampire. So, guys, continuity, where are you at? Where did that vampire go?
Oh my God, why were they able to have this? This movie fucking sucks.
No, it's great. It's fantastic. But this is just, you know, my level of eye for detail in these things. Sure. Where I definitely was like, could she have gotten the motion like as she was leapfrogging him to like stake him at the same time? Probably. I'm probably thinking too hard about it.
Maybe she like threw a stake from behind and it was just her forward momentum. That's right.
Yeah.
She just had nowhere to go.
I'll accept it. It's still the best horror movie ever.
They go looking for Merrick and instead find Lothos and Amelie.
God damn it.
Who hasn't been there?
Ugh.
And he uses his glamour on Buffy, freezing her in her tracks. He's about to attack since Merrick fully admits that she's not ready for him. But this time, Merrick breaks his modus operandi, and he interferes, going to defend Buffy and getting staked himself by Lothos for his trouble.
Come on. Heartbreaking.
Wow. So true. And heart-staking.
Shit.
This unbalancing of the sort of their typical way of interacting sends Lothos fleeing, leaving Buffy to recover and hold Merrick as he dies.
Ugh.
But he was inspired by her. You do everything wrong, but that's good. Don't play our game. Lothos is a show. Remember about the music and listen. When the music stops, the rest is... croak!
Rip, 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 rip.
That's right.
A terrible time for a nap, Merrick.
Yeah.
For the forever nap.
That's right. A dirt nap.
Oof.
And, yeah, it's powerful stuff, baby.
It is. And she goes back to Merrick's apartment.
Mm-hmm. It's another, I think, really good juxtaposed cut where she is really, like, wallowing in the depth of the sorrow that she's feeling. And then it cuts to the, like, bright light and banality of Kimberly gossiping about Buffy in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And this transition is so shocking.
Yeah.
That you feel the gut punch of what she was going through.
100%.
And then what they expect her to go back to.
Yeah. Yeah. Where, you know, she's now seen the other side. She's grown to care for someone. She's lost someone. Right. Besides, you know, acquaintances in high school.
And she's seen that they don't care about death. And they have no familiarity with that connection that she had with Merrick, and it just really is it's a good scene.
It's a great scene, and she's so on point when she says to the girls in the gymnasium, you know, I think reality left the room 5 minutes ago, right? Yeah, like
that's right.
They are so focused on the narrow view of high school and the dance that's coming up and making decorations that they're completely blind to all the tragedy that's happening around them.
That's right. Despite the fact that they're working on the dance, that is supposed to be creating that awareness of the world around them.
Hello.
So, yeah. And Buffy arrives. She rejects this exact banality. And she says, excuse me for being late and having something important to do. It's just a stupid dance with a bunch of stupid people that I see every stupid day.
Every stupid day.
Yeah. Been there, girlfriend.
I get you.
Yeah. And it deeply offends her friends. And they scatter.
Mm. Good.
I do think it's funny that we finally get a chance to see the theme as well, which is hug the world.
Hug the world.
Thanks, Hogs.
Oh, man. Hug the world.
Buffy stalks off into the night, and Pike finds her, and she says, I'm going shopping. Don't try and stop me, okay? Really, really funny line. This is for a dress, because she's going to the dance so that she can feel normal for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Buoyed by the deep guilt that she feels over Merrick's death and the violence that she has to commit, considering she never wanted to kill anyone in the first place, as she tells Pike here. And he says, "You're the guy, Buffy. You're the chosen guy."
Love that line.
That's right. I also love her follow-up. "I choose to be shopping."
Good for her.
That's right. And he says, "I'm not disappointed, just angry." Great reversal. Pike does a sick peel out.
Oh, man.
He's great.
He's like, fuck it. I don't need this. I'm going to get prepared for battle anyway.
That's right. The problem is, Benny was in the nearby photo booth, and he heard the whole goddamn thing.
It's Buffy? She's the one?
He's a little snitch. Benny's a little snitch.
It's funny, though, because as much as Lotho sucks and Amlyn is, I mean, he's fantastic, but, you know, he's one of the primary bad guys. Like, right. They're not out there gossiping.
That's right. That's
good
right.
for them. They're not snitches.
That's right.
Benny, though. Fucking Benny.
Benny squeals right away. Mm. It goes up the ladder. Lothos decides that in his showy fashion, rather than just end this now with the Slayer unmasked, they'll attend the dance.
Because he wants to dance.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Saturday arrives, and with it, the dance.
Oh my God, we made it.
We made it.
We made
quite
it
the outfits
dance.
In this time capsule scene.
Yeah. There are some interesting ones. Buffy's is still my favorite.
It's great. Great stuff.
Yeah. The mixture of the halter with way too much cleavage for a high school girl, all white, lots of layers.
Very wedding dress looking.
Yeah. Very wedding dress for a prom with now my favorite part, the white combat boots.
True.
That also, makes the
is
outfit.
Is it even a prom? Because they talk about all the other dances they have coming up.
No,
and they're like, and there's the formal and the...
Yeah, there's the semi-formal and the full formal and then senior prom, right? So this is like one of four dances, right? In my mind, I'm like, this is like a homecoming dance.
Yeah. This is the teen canteen over here.
But Buffy really, really went all out. But you know what? Could be her last dance.
So true.
Could be.
Wow. Great point.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is she arrives and finds out that her boyfriend, Jeffrey, has left her for Jenny.
Ah, shit. Do you know how angry I was as a kid sharing my name?
Wow.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
I didn't even. Wow.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It is when you are going through a movie and you find out that the character that you share your name with is kind of a piece of shit. And like rewatching it, knowing that that's how it turns out, you're watching Jenny make eyes at Jeff. Through the whole, anytime Buffy leaves the scene, you see her like, hey, Jeff, like leaning.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Jenny kind of sucks. And it's really hard to say that of another Jenny.
She is. This is very relatable. Very recently, for this very podcast, we were talking about Venganza del Sexo, a.k.a. the Curious Dr. Hump. And one of the characters is named George, and he does some not so nice things. I was like, come on, man, you're better than this.
You're fucking up our namesake here. Come on.
That's right.
Not all Georges. Not all Jens.
I'm always saying this. The rest of her friends are not really interested in hanging out with Buffy either, so she feels truly isolated until from around the corner peeks Pike. Soul patch shaved off and everything.
Oh my God. And he trimmed the sideburns. It really made all the difference. And like, he's also wearing this, like, so he has on that leather jacket, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
his motorcycle one. Yeah.
And
we
see later as things progress, he's got this like white flowy button down with like a green paisley vest. And it is very of the Dark Ages, I thought. It was almost like they transported him from the Dark Ages scenes or stole some of that wardrobe and brought it over here.
Very interesting. Bring him back through time with her.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
They dance, and Pike says, "You're not like other girls," to which she responds, "Yes, she is," before they smooch.
Yeah. Mm.
This works twofold for me. First is that she solidifies that slaying is simply a facet of her life, and that she has the same desire for affection and companionship as everybody else.
Yep.
It's also a nice little way to open things up to the spectrum of experiences that women have, and that she has simply embraced her responsibilities earlier than her friends, and that they, too, may grow into responsible people who are able to sort of understand the world beyond high school.
Yeah, that's a really great way to look at it. And this is totally kind of a curveball, but something that you remind me of that I didn't get as a youth when I watched this movie, and we haven't even talked about it at all, is like Buffy's spidey sense, which is she can sense when the vampires are around because she will get cramps, like menstrual cramps, right? So that also plays into like her experiencing things faster than her friends, and it could definitely be like an analogy for becoming a woman in your first period.
Right, that isolation that she's feeling, it's not so different from Carrie, right? This is just like a very parallel movie to that in a lot of ways.
Wow, yeah, that's, I never made that comparison before, but I definitely see it.
There you go.
Ah, finding your special place in either telekinesis or vampire slang. Love both of them.
And, you know, Jeffrey and Andy, you know, versus John Travolta, they both get destroyed in the fight. So.
Ruined.
Yeah. The vampires do attack, though. I thought this was such a funny payoff for earlier. They're like, why do we need to invite every senior?
Yes.
And it seems like such a goofy, mean girl thing to say. But then you go, oh my God, all these vampires are already invited in. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm, because they're seniors.
That's right. Luckily, Pike brought a bag full of steaks. And so while he defends the gym from the assault, Buffy goes out to fight. There's a ton of great fog randomly. It adds a lot of goofy, fun atmosphere.
It has all the great, like, kung fu, like, all the fight noises.
Uh-huh.
Like, the wind. Oh, it's, yeah, it's very well done.
Definitely. And she does escape the vampire's clutches with Amelin in pursuit. And she also passes Jenny, finishing up with Jeffrey in the car, saying, wow, that was quick.
That was quick. Oof. The shame.
Yeah. Get his ass, Jenny.
Ugh.
Chaos continues in the gym with a funny and, like, really good delivery of the Cowardly Lion intro from Benny.
Yeah, amazing. Like, David, who knew?
Yeah, he kills it.
Yeah.
Before he tries to convince Pike to let Benny change him, again, very homoerotic, there's also a real desperation when he, like, cries in despair at the rejection. He's like, why do you like these people? They're sheep. Forget them. Live forever. We can start a band. Great stuff. David Arquette really fucking kills it.
Yeah. I mean, performance-wise, in my opinion, Paul Rubens, obviously. And then I'll say Christy Swanson and then David Arquette.
With a bullet.
Yeah. Yeah. He really gives it the all, but he's number three for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really does a lot with not so many scenes.
Not a ton of scenes, but he gives it his all.
Yeah, we also get our second Wizard of Oz reference in like 2 minutes. It's a really strange...
I was like, what is this, a David Lynch movie? Like, we're just all of a sudden going to drop a bunch of Wizard of Oz stuff in here and not acknowledge it? Cool.
Yeah, it is bizarre that it's not like spread throughout. They're just like, all right, concentrate it in these two scenes.
But they also kind of do that with the Dark Ages things, where they only really use that in like, what, the first quarter of the movie, I think. Because they never really take you back to that place after like the first half, right? Mm. So maybe it was a choice they made on purpose, or just a fun coincidence that those scenes ended up lining up one next to one another.
Or maybe they were seeing a repertory screening of The Wizard of Oz when they didn't know what movie they were going to see. Could be.
Nobody knows. Yeah.
But yeah, so there's the second Wizard of Oz reference. Buffy and Amelin have their showdown that leads to her staking him. And the funniest moment in the movie for me, which is Paul Rubens' death scene. Totally improvised, as you might guess. Fran told him, quote, you know what, Paul? You just die. Just figure it out. Just die.
And he surely does.
He certainly does.
Yeah.
Really funny because you can sort of see the camera start to pull away both times he goes off frame. Where, like, he just, tricked like, them,
comes
too.
Back. Yeah. Like, they were even convinced that he was done, and he was not done.
Definitely not.
Such a delight. And immediately following the second Wizard of Oz reference, which is, you know, get you and your little dog, too. He also makes another very feminine adult, well, not a super adult, but a very female-focused reference and says, there are times you don't feel so fresh, Buffy. Mm-hmm. Another joke that as a kid, right over my head, didn't really get it, what it means. now is a grown-ass woman. Wow.
There you go.
Wow. Was not prepared for so many laughs. One after the other there with both of the Wizard of Oz straight into the smelly vagina jokes. Wasn't ready.
Classic, classic. What's also interesting is that Lothos showed up. He like plucks at his violin. Mm-hmm. He's ready to freeze Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
But he lets her take out Amalyn, who is clearly shocked.
Yeah.
Lothos is also very clearly bored after living forever, calling this his last gift to Amalyn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what's clear is that the thrill of danger from Slayer at peak power is as seductive to him as he is to her.
Mm.
He pulls her in tight, and he's about to bite her neck when Pike fries Benny on the breaker box. And this cuts the music and snaps Buffy out of her trance, and she realizes what Merrick was telling her. And the final word was silence.
Mm-hmm.
She uses her keen fashion sense in the form of hairspray to turn a flaming cross into a flame-throwing cross. She runs upstairs as Amalyn puts out the flames on his damn dome.
And he has a very odd reaction at that point where he's kind of like, ooh, like he's kind of like mystified by it, you know? Yeah. Like it's not really hurting him in a sense, right?
Just the idea that she has any kind of autonomy at this point still, yeah. I think, is what's shocking.
So it was him being like, holy shit, she's still going.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
He pursues Buffy upstairs and interrupts Steven Root handing out detention slips to detention. The staked vampire corpse.
Is that everyone? Nope, one over there.
Yeah, very funny. And he threatens to split open everyone like rotted fruit.
Mm.
Rutger, the guy has got it, man.
Yeah, he knows how to make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Their final fight takes place. Pretty fun stuff. It ends with a good old-fashioned stake through the heart for Lothos.
Duh.
Great work, Buffy. Nice distraction at the right time, Pike. Everyone gets involved.
Mm-hmm. And Lothos Buffy drops. Well, Lothos drops in. Oops.
Yeah.
As he gets stabbed,
mm-hmm.
he falls to the ground and then just covers his face with his cape.
Don't look at me.
What a... Just a gentleman, if you will. Just
that's right.
He has too much respect for himself.
Don't Oops. Look at me while I die.
Oops. What yeah. a like what a way to go.
Hey, we should all be so lucky. Buffy acknowledges her work with satisfaction to Pike, while in the background, some people discuss her, and a boy says, "She's way out there, man." And a girl says, "I don't know. I think she's kind of cool."
Same.
You go, this one's for the ladies, guys.
It is. Female empowerment.
That's right.
Men are afraid.
So true. So true. Very nice moment, though, that kind of demonstrates the equality that they're striving for. When Pike says he saved her a dance, he says, "I suppose you want to lead." And when she says no, he says, "Me neither."
Me neither. Ugh.
Beautiful. Neither one of them wants to control the other one. They just want to share in the closeness as they sway in the silence.
What a way to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oops. The silence. And the silence.
So true. And it's the silence that saved her dang life before she hops on the back of Pike's bike and they drive off into the sunrise with a just delightful cover of We Close Our Eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing credit stuff. First, we see the newscast with interviews in the aftermath. Andy says, "They had this look in their eyes. Totally cold. Animal. I think they were Young Republicans."
Took me out. Another joke that went over my head as a child.
So funny. Had me dying. They did also sneak one platoon reference in here, as that's how Steven Root saw action in NAMM.
Yeah, so maybe that was a call out.
I think so.
Yeah, to that Charlie Sheen from before. That's right. a little jab at Joss for you.
That's right. And they say, "Who's responsible? Gang members? Cultists?" We'll never know, but down in the basement, we check in one last time with Amalyn, still dying to this day, legend says.
Still just groaning. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ah. It's so good. It's just, rest in peace, Paul Rubens.
That's right.
You were a legend and live on in infamy forever.
So true.
Mm. And I think that is a great
segue into talking about why this isn't just a good horror movie, but is in fact the best horror movie ever made. And I'm going to let you start.
Oh, geez. Well, I think you made a lot of really great points leading us up to this, right? So it is an analogy for taking a look at the world around you and taking things more seriously, becoming an adult, facing your fears, accepting what you've been put on this earth to do, whatever that may be, right? I think that that's one thing that makes it great. Another thing that makes it great, in my opinion, is it's just fun. Right? It's a nice little snapshot into the past, what it was like in the 90s. I feel like the fashion, the lingo, which was just so stupid, it's also fitting to that. But then the comedy that comes along with it, the great performances that happen throughout. That's what I got for you, George.
No, I totally agree. To me, this is the best horror movie ever made because early on, I mentioned that the script called Buffy blonde in nature as well as in name. And this presupposition of a character where someone who looks like Buffy thinks a certain way and has a certain path in a horror movie is sort of rejected by this movie. And it's not just a Buffy thing. Merrick is assumed to be a dirty old man, but he becomes a mentor that ultimately sacrifices himself for Buffy. And Pike is a burnout until he's helping Buffy save the day and revealing the sensitivity that he has underneath. Meanwhile, despite their varied looks, you have vampires as misogyny personified. Benny is half an incel here. Lothos is like a pickup artist who has no respect for Buffy and her autonomy. They're looming everywhere. She even fears Merrick is one at first. She calls him a skeevy old man who attacks little girls or whatever she says. And I think that what makes this particularly special is that with such an interesting and timely look at misogyny and the sort of things that Fran herself was experiencing as a sort of a cipher for all women at the time, it would be very easy, I think, to sort of drown the movie in the grimness of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't lose its heart. It is still very, very funny. And I think that maintaining the idea that this is meant for teenagers is really what helps it do that.
Yeah.
The fact that they are aiming to balance the horror with the comedy means that they are, by necessity, forced to sort of shine a light, like a little positivity on this idea that Buffy is surrounded by just awful men everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a really nice thing. And it's a nice message to say that there might be a Pike out there, right? Who's a good dude, who's not looking to control anybody. And Buffy is able to maintain her sense of self and not feel like she has to compromise any facet of her personality, whether that's Slayer or being, you know, who she is. You know, Pike has to learn to accept that.
Yeah.
And he does in the movie. And that's that she is feeling good about this, right? When we see what goes on with Jenny and Jeffrey, and you're like, it's good that she outgrew this.
Yeah,
like definitely. He is awful, and what he wants out of a partner is someone like Jenny, who was meek and two-faced and conniving, and like, I just think that they do such a great job of making Buffy such a engaging and charismatic character that you want to connect with, that you want to do well, and you see her grow. Mm-hmm. And seeing that growth is, I think, what makes this the best horror movie ever made. You know, they do just such a great job of balancing that horror with that comedy, keeping Buffy centered as the sort of cipher, as the insert for us. And they just knock it out of the park. Fran, you killed it, dog.
Nailed
great
it.
Work.
Yeah.
And that's what makes this the best horror movie ever made. Jen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. This was an absolute blast. Please tell the people if you got anything going on, if you want to plug any socials. If you don't, just shout something out that you like, that you've been enjoying lately.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so I don't really have any socials that I want to put out there, but thank you, George, for inviting me to be on the podcast. I was really looking forward to this. I've been really into this show called Free Ren. It is not horror. It is an anime. It is absolutely delightful, about mages and elf mage specifically. and adventures. So not horror, but very enjoyable. And yeah, that's me. I've got a cat here who is purring. So that's really great. And that's something I got going on right now.
Hell yeah. Plug for cats.
Shout out to all the cats.
Second one of the show. And I'm here for it. Yeah. You know, I'll plug cats as well. They're great.
We might get a little purring in the mic. Who knows?
Hell yeah. And I'm going to leave it in.
You should.
People, hey, check out your local shelter. Get a cat of your own.
Yeah. Foster, you know, volunteer, help out, donate.
That's right. That's right.
Do the thing.
That's right. As far as my plugs, this is always kind of a weird time now that the show is ending where I am not really sure what to plug. Check out the back catalog. Lots of really great episodes that have had a lot of work put into them. And I hope people will check out a movie that they haven't seen even. I always appreciate a lot of people tell me that they sort of use the podcast as a guide to like what movies they should be watching, right? They're like, oh, you know, somebody thought that this was the best horror movie ever made. I'm going to use it as like a blind watch list and just pull something off of the shelf, watch it because it was on the show. I think that's great. I love that. And I think that you find a lot of movies that you didn't know about through this show. I know I do, personally. A lot of people have introduced me to movies that I haven't seen. Buffy was a movie that I hadn't seen. Loved it. Had a great time with it. So yeah, definitely, you know, don't be afraid to branch out. Check out an episode for a movie you haven't seen. Learn about something. Lots of good stuff out there. Have some cool guests coming up. We got John Gabris coming up in April. And Nick Weiger coming up in April. Speaking of anime, he is talking about Ninja Scroll.
Ooh.
Which I am very excited to check out.
I've seen that one.
There you go.
It's intense.
That's what I hear. That's good.
This is intense.
Yeah. And Mr. Gabris will be talking about Cat's Eye, the Stephen King anthology. So some very, very fun stuff coming up on the Best Little Horror House in Philly. Let nobody say that the show is going out with a whimper. Okay? Audience, let nobody say that. All right. That's it. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
I didn't know if I was supposed to say goodbye also.